It's Thursday, April 21st, 2011, and you're listening to episode 229 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 56 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And this is Chris.
Two quick announcements. First off, I want you guys to know that despite the fact we haven't mentioned it in a while because Fear the Con came up and sort of distracted us, we have not forgotten the charity auction for March of Dimes. So if you have any ideas of things that you would love to see us auction off for a March of Dimes charity auction, then be sure to either go to the blog post of this show or onto the forums in a thread that I will link from the show notes and post your ideas for a charity auction, because obviously, you know, we want to raise as much money as we can, which requires getting things you guys actually would pay to get. But 100% of the money raised for this will go to charity. And we will kick this off in another, probably about 2 or 3 weeks. We can't do it next week because we've got an interview episode in all probability lined up. We'll get back to this very soon. The other thing I want to draw your attention to is something that is not a charity, but is something that I think is worth your time and money, which is the infamous Mikey Mason, who is the official comedian of Fear the Boot, comes to Fear the Con every year.
There's no other job or profession.
Nope, none.
He is our official comedian.
That's correct.
When we say, bring the funny, he does.
Exactly.
And no, wait, Mikey. No, stand back. It's just a test.
And just as John got into gaming and podcasting for the sex, Mikey's in it for the money. Mm-hmm. Every time John gets laid, Mikey makes $5, which means Mikey has like $10 to his name. But
not bad. Not bad at all.
But nonetheless, you may also know Mikey from his runaway hit on YouTube, She Don't Like Firefly, which Chad just checked and has approaching 250,000 views. Mm-hmm. And he is working on an all-geek act that he can take on the road, and also one that he can sell in album format. But in order to finish that, he needs some professional mixing done and also some work done on drums and a couple other instruments that he's just not skilled in. And so he started a project on Kickstarter. And for anyone that's not familiar with Kickstarter, the way it works is that you pledge a certain amount of money to the project. And there's a minimum that has to be met, which is, I think, $2,500. By the time this show drops, you got about 10 or 12 days to get out there and make your donation. And if that amount is not met, then you pay nothing. It all gets refunded. But if that amount is met, your money is collected, but you will also get different rewards from Mikey based on the amount that you have pledged. And so if you are interested in supporting Mikey's comedy act, or in perhaps even collecting some of the prizes that he's offering, we will link to his Kickstarter thing off the show notes. And I highly encourage you to get out there and take a look at that, because he's offering some good stuff. And I would really hate to see this not make it to market just because of the fact that Mikey, you know, let's be honest, like people who write role-playing games, comedians, unless you're like the really, really big ones, aren't exactly rolling in cash. And I'd hate to see this not make it to market just because of the fact that he's a little bit shy on what it's going to take to get some of the finishing work done. So
even if you have absolutely no plans on donating to this whatsoever, even though you should, go out there and read what he's giving away. It's freaking hilarious.
I've been pointing everyone to this thing, and people who have never heard any of his songs still get a kick out of reading what his rewards are.
Yeah, and you know what? Even if all you can give is like a buck or a couple bucks, that's still going to help this guy succeed. So once again, I'm going to stress, this is not a charity. This is something that he's trying to do for his livelihood. But Mikey's a great guy. He's got a great act. So if you're able to, then please get out there and support it. All right, so Wayne, last episode, we talked about your pseudo-sexual need to create characters. And you said you had an update on where this has gone in the week between episodes.
I got home, and over the next day or so, I started writing out game notes for a one-shot. And it was, I decided I wanted to do a superhero one-shot. And I went through and I wrote all of my notes, all the story, all of these ties, NPCs, things like that. The one thing I didn't do was make a single character. After all of that, after all that talk about that being what I wanted to do, not one character has been made for this one shot.
Okay, so why?
Now you've just let everybody down.
I guess kind of like what Chris just stated. My question is why? Your big pump up was for characters. So how is it you sat down with pencil and paper and not a single character came out of that.
Yeah, and that's the odd thing. Is I kept thinking that's what I wanted to do. But after all of our talk about making systems and making stories and that, when I sat down and started writing comments down, it all went towards the story and not any of the characters, except for some NPCs here and there. I honestly don't know why I didn't go through and create actual characters and do character sheets and all that for them yet.
You're kicking your addiction. I'm proud of you, Wayne.
But it just amuses me that that was the big thing for me. That's what I really wanted to do. And then when I sat down, that was the one thing I didn't do.
Did it satisfy your creative itch, at least?
Not quite. Because I still want to run this now.
Well, because you didn't make any characters, that's why.
That's part of it, too. So I'm looking at local cons coming up, and I'm actually planning on, as soon as I pick out a system and actually make the characters, because I haven't done that yet, I'm going to go to a local con, and I'm going to run it.
Do you need to borrow Savage Worlds Explorer Edition?
No, I don't want Savage Worlds. I want something actually intended for superheroes.
Do you want OGL? You want D20? Is that what you're looking for?
So you want Necessary Evil?
Actually, if you have a copy of it, yes.
No, I don't. But do you want Spirit of the Century?
What is this? Is this like a role-playing game yard sale in here?
No, I'm more like a pimp showing his wares. In fact, who is it that specifically requested I do part of a Fear the Boot episode in Mink's voice from Chris Mace's game? I can't remember who it was, but I only do the voice when my throat's sore. So anyway, no, I'm just trying to help Wayne get set up with a system because of the fact that, I mean, what's the biggest problem with creatives, ourself included, is going from talking to doing. In fact, we have a thread amongst ourselves entitled Going from Talking to Doing, where we do a whole lot of talking and not a whole lot of doing.
Hey, so, man, I'm doing.
Oh, I know. Yes, sir. And I'm actually working on something as well that I hope will pan out, but I'm so tired of announcing projects that never get finished that I'm not going to go any further than saying I'm working on something. Let's move on from that to something that the audience can get out there and actually look at. I want to talk about a site called, and I don't know if this is mispronounced or not, but it has such a weird name that...
Yeah, I don't think you could get the pronunciation wrong since it's some sort of made up... amalgamation.
Well, you know what? I think in the same way, I couldn't get it right. In fact, looking at this site, I think it is a wonderful idea. I wholeheartedly support it. I've got tons of thoughts on it. The only complaint I have about the site is it is a terrible domain name. And the domain name is pagmata.org. Now, what that stands for, and I'm going to link this in the show notes because I don't expect anyone to necessarily guess how to spell or to get to that site. But what that stands for is the Player Generated Map and Document Archive. So, Chris, since you're the one that found the site, do you want to go ahead and introduce what it is?
No.
Okay, that's strangely honest. All right.
So no, actually, no, I will. I'll be happy to.
Okay.
And I think actually that this is something that would have an appeal to any gamer, but I think those who cut their teeth on the Redbox or started with really early, at least this was the feeling that I got as I started, you know, kind of combing through the site. What it is numerous submissions from a number of different people. Some are anonymous, some are named individuals. One name that did pop out at me, Luke Crane, submitted some stuff on here. And basically what this is their old hand-drawn maps. And that's the thing. This is all hand-drawn. None of it is maps that they may have gotten from some sort of supplement or adventure or whatever. But this is all hand-drawn stuff.
It's not just maps, though.
No, there's character sheets as well, and I was getting to that. It's all stuff they use in their old campaigns, and it's the notes from those campaigns. It's the tables and charts that they may have made up in relation to those. It's old character sheets that they used. Then the neat part about it is you know, looking at some of the level of detail that some of these things went into, which both at the same time impresses me and shames me when I think back to the stuff that I did, which was some of this was not nearly as gorgeous as some of these maps are. It's kind of voyeuristic in a way because you're getting a chance to look in and look at what other people did. And you're getting that peek behind an individual's curtain and somebody that you don't know necessarily. You know, it's one thing to look at, you know, if the group of us
Chris,
were playing,
I just
it's one
have
thing
to
look
I just
at your...
have to hijack you. I'm so
oh, no.
sorry.
Did I I'm do so a patism?
No, you didn't. I'm just, we're sitting here clicking through it as you're talking. So the very short version is that basically this is like a WikiLeaks for people's GMing notes.
That's a really good way to describe it.
As you were setting it up, and you were doing a great job of doing it, don't get me wrong.
Well, thank you.
We just lost it because as we were clicking through this, we found somebody's GMing notes for...
The character sheet called George the Dolphin, False Killer Whale.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a monster or a character, but yes, this is George the Dolphin.
Oh, And the best part was, and just as you said the words, I can't believe how well organized these are and how much better they are from the stuff I used to do. That's when Dan opens
there's
this.
There's this at the bottom, wonderful picture.
There's this cartoon picture of it. This thing that's like a cross between a shark, a dolphin, and Garfield that's like killing people. There's like body parts floating around it.
There's a UFO stealing fish.
And he's saying, I'm George.
I mean, this looks like something that basically somebody wrote when they were maybe 13.
Right.
But it looks great. Yeah,
but you know what? But not all of it does. Right. We were just cracking up at this one. But in clicking through of it, not all of it looks like that. I mean, it really does. Going back to the phrase I just used, it looks like a WikiLeaks of people's GMing notes, where basically, if you're a game master, you take your campaign notes or your single session notes from the game you just ran or a game you ran 20 years ago. You put it on a flatbed scanner, you send it into this site, they post it, and this stuff gets archived off there for other GMs to look at for comedy, for inspiration, for technique, for concepts, for whatever it is that they're hurting for. And I think, as much as we're laughing at this one particular picture, I think the site overall is a wonderful thing, and I'm very glad that a name as big as Luke Crane has chosen to get involved in this website. Like I said, whose only real fault I can find is that they have a horrific domain name. But
if this is like a WikiLeaks for GMs, I'm going to steal your adventure, Racy Rhonda the Racist Tomb of Sexual Deviance. That was a classic adventure.
It sounds like one I'd like to play.
I bet.
There's a random image feature once you get into the gallery in the archive, and you can just kind of click through random images. And I'm looking at this cross-section view, basically, of Castle on a Hill. And the quality of it, yeah, not that great. But yet at the same time, I look at that, and that appeals to the early gamer in me. And I just think, you know what? Bet you when that guy drew that, he was loving every minute of it. I would venture to say that his players enjoyed it as well.
You know, Chris, I'm going to be a little bit less, and I hate to use this characterization because I don't think this is what you meant. But nonetheless, the way I'm going to phrase it is that I'm going to be a little bit less condescending. And that's not the word I'm looking for, but so it just excuse that. But the point being, what I see here is honesty. Because, yeah. Look, as a game master, I am highly reticent to share my GMing notes. In fact, the one and only time in the entire history of this show that I have shared my GMing notes, when I posted my What's Really Going On document for Skies of Glass game, I edited it, sanitized it, cleaned it up, and even still, I have no doubt it looked really rough. Because let's be honest, Game Master notes, you know, even presuming you keep...
Well, enough for public consumption.
Bingo.
So it doesn't matter.
They're meant to be purely idiosyncratic memory jogs for the Game Master alone that were never meant for public consumption, that were probably written in haste because of the fact that you've got a day or two or an hour or two or a minute or two before your game starts. You're trying to get something down. And most Game Masters, and I'll certainly put myself in this category, as a result, get very, very embarrassed about sharing their notes. But what the end result is as Game Masters, we never have a chance to either A, learn from each other, or B, be encouraged by the fact that when you pull back the curtains, everyone else's game mastering techniques and notes are just as crappy as yours.
Mm-hmm. Chris mentioned that this was a good site for him for nostalgia purposes. I see it from another point of view. When I first was going to run anything, the very first thing I ran was one of our revolving GM games. And I was following up Chad. Chad was going first to start it. I was still struggling at that point. What do I put in notes? I talked about, we had episodes where we talked about things that go on it. But it's just for me, I had no idea what it was supposed to look like, what the format was. We had all these big vagaries. So I hit the internet. I searched everywhere, just trying to find anyone's GM notes. Nobody was posting this stuff back then.
Exactly. And I think it's because of the fact that everyone has this perception that everybody else is putting out these production quality products, when in fact, everybody's stuff is the same. It's all scribbling on torn out sheets of notebook paper. I mean, you know what I see when I look at this picture of George the Dolphin, or even getting to more serious stuff? I see my own game mastering notes. And yeah. I see not just stuff that goes back to my frenetic teen years, and I do certainly see that in there, but I see stuff that goes back to more recent games that have been really deep, mature, seasoned campaigns. But the fact is, the notes that I was drawing from were just wild, random, half-assed scribblings at best. In fact, I think I'm going to make a commitment, provided I remember this. Whenever I GM next, I will take the GMing notes that I use for my next campaign, and I will use you people in the Fear the Boot community to keep me honest. Whenever we say Chad's campaign is over and I'm running something again, remind me, and I will start posting my GMing notes on the site. And you guys can see how completely unimpressive my notes really are.
There's even, I even found a random note the GM slid to a player. I mean, with the note with the mention on there, it says make a listen check. And now he's got the results of that check. You're just getting that peek inside of what that adventure was going on. You know, it creates this image in your head of what's happening to this group. It's kind of fascinating in that voyeuristic way.
I don't think I can even post my notes. I mean, everybody knows I'm a super
Just take
notes-
a picture of your brain.
Yeah, I can put up an MRI.
Take what of his brain?
A picture.
A picture? A picture of Buddha's brain?
A pic tour? Would that be better for you, Mr. Elias?
I support that idea 125%.
Jeez. But, you know, I do have...
It is art typical of what goes on here.
I do have
No, that's
some...
not even the wrong... That's not even the right wrong pronunciation.
The right wrong...
Archetype.
Archetype.
Archetypical.
I'm sorry. Go on, Chad.
I
can't even screw up enough for him.
I have none to very, very tiny amounts, but the notes that I do have, especially when I do a longer campaign, actually do generate a little bit of paperwork. It's exactly what you said earlier. They're not really notes, they're memory jogs. Like, I'll have a page of names because people keep, well, what's this guy's name? Like, oh, I better write that down so I can remember it for next time because I won't remember it. But it'll be stuff like, I want you guys to have an encounter. So it'll be something like entrance to a crypt, skeletons popping out of the ground, traditional adventurers.
The name Colin.
The name, what?
I'm serious.
Oh, I thought you meant something specific.
No, I mean, seriously, having looked at your notes, it's these things that aren't per se a followable outline.
Right.
It's just this, I don't know, almost free associative collection of words, you know, little one-liners, phrases, snippets that to you are just kind of things to jog your memory, which if I showed you 6 months after running the game would probably be as nonsensical to you as they are to an outsider. And as a result, I don't know they'd be too helpful to any other GMs.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. But I think, for example, in the case of my notes, while my notes may be very idiosyncratic and the game that I ultimately run may have very little resemblance to those notes, as Wayne observed upon reading the notes I posted for the Skies of Glass game as a resource document a couple months ago. Nonetheless, I think there are things there that other game masters could look at and maybe get something from, or if nothing else, at least have that moment of relief of, wow, everybody else's notes are just as ridiculous as mine.
They're just like me.
Yeah, exactly. But that doesn't mean that a good game can't come from that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd have no problem sharing my notes, but it'd be actually difficult to do. Because for me, I put it all in OneNote, so I have almost a database of things out there. So I have 15 different tabs, one tab for NPCs, one tab for this, and under that, there's a structure of them. And I find when I actually was running something, I did much better when I just close the laptop lid and forget that I even had all of that there.
You know,
because it just distracted me.
I guess along those lines, I could probably even take the GME notes that I used from like Fear the Con and post them up there for the two Transformers games. Now, I don't know. I'll have to look through their requirements to see exactly what they want for stuff that they'll use and add to their database. But there's just a couple pages of game notes for two one-shotters, two interlinked one-shotters, but nonetheless, two one-shotters, and see if they would take those. I don't know. I need to dig through and see if they're, you know, D&D specific or what exactly they want.
I have to say, if I were a note-heavy GM, I would use OneNote. It's a Microsoft Office product not a whole lot of people know about. Absolutely awesome if you do notes of any kind or of a project where you need multiple books and tabs of organization. It's like a scratch pad, notepad on steroids. I love it. I wrote Lucid using OneNote.
I struggled with it, the problem being because it does allow all of that structure. I found myself at the, you know, the first con game I was running at Fear the Con, I was looking at it too much. I was going tab by tab too much. And it was because it was there, it was in front of me. And the first game I ran, it started slow because of that, because I kept hitting all these tabs. The moment I closed it, the game got 200% better.
When I run a game, I hate it when my players have their noses buried in their character sheets and all their lists and books and stuff. It's like, what do you do here? All of a sudden I hear rustlings of paper and rules and notes like, no. I don't want to know what the rules say you do. I want to know what you want to do. The same thing is when I'm a player, I hate it when I say something to the GM and every other sentence out of my mouth to the GM and he's going through his notes. He's digging through his notes on his laptop doing whatever.
Chad, you posed a question.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
Oh.
You know what's funny is I even said, I'm going to write this down because that's a good question. You're going to forget it. Here we are like 20 minutes later and you have in fact forgotten it.
Was it a good question?
I am a prophet.
You are.
I am a Vatican.
Too bad we can't turn a prophet.
Vatican assassin.
I'm a Vatican assassin warlock prophet.
Let's face it. No one would give you odds on that bet. Of course he's going to forget. Yeah, well, Chad.
Believe you me. I know. So here is the question.
I'm like a font of ideas. Ideas just come out of me. And then like they're Helvetica? Gone.
Yeah. Well, something comes out of you.
You are. And if somebody followed you around and actually took notes on all your ideas, you'd probably be a much more successful man.
Probably.
You've probably pissed away more ideas than, you know, more productive people have taken to market.
Heinlein in Time Enough for Love, I think it was.
You know what's funny is you can remember everybody else's ideas. You so perfectly remember everyone else's ideas, but you can't remember your own.
In Heinlein's Time Enough for Love, he had a character who I think was Lazarus Long, but could be a different character. He made his money writing books. And how he wrote books is he had secretaries, a couple of secretaries, following him around. And he'll be going through his normal day, and then he'll stop and look at his secretary and go, he walks into the room, and it's dark, and the femme fatale is there, and she pulls a gun, and she's about to shoot. End of chapter two. And then he goes on about his day. Then a couple hours later, he'll stop, and he'll be like, okay, chapter two, blah, 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 blah. And any moment, they just write it down. I could turn out tons of books with that method.
You could. So here's the question that you asked. What do you do with your old notes?
I throw them away.
Go on. Why? I mean, because of the fact that it's just clutter, because of the fact you know it won't mean anything to you 6 months from now, because it's just little one word and three words clips.
I would say, yeah, all of the above. I'm not a pack rat.
Right.
I hate stuff in my life. Dawn is a pack rat.
You yourself said experience is very disposable to you.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think you've ever put it quite so coarsely.
You always talk about being done with
it. Yeah, that's what I mean, is you're done with something. You've run this game, you're done with it. Trash.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like I've rated ideas from games in the past, but if it's interesting enough for me to rate it, I don't need to go back to my notes. I remember what the idea is. All the stuff that I forget obviously was not worthy enough to be in a current game. I won't look at them. If I look at them, I will barely be able to read my own handwriting, and my spelling is atrocious. And there was a context there, a mood, a theme. Something that I was really latching onto, like, because I really like putting themes in my game, even if the players aren't getting the themes, or even if the theme is not there for the player, just to amuse myself. The theme that I latch onto when I run a game is not a theme that I will be interested in years down the road. Like the current game I'm running for you guys with Gnarl and everybody else, the current theme in this game is that every action has consequence. Every single thing you guys do has an A and a B consequence. You cannot choose a right or wrong answer, but no matter what answer you choose, whether it's A or B, there will always be a consequence. And that's a theme that I'm trying to play with in this game. It was not a theme that I was interested in a couple of years ago. It's not a theme that I'm going to be interested in a couple of years from now. So to me, those themes...
Chad, I'll have to give you credit over BioWare in one thing. The consequences of my actions make some sort of sense.
I just finished Fallout New Vegas, and I completely agree with you.
Well, that wouldn't be BioWare. That'd be...
I thought it was... Oh, Bethesda.
It was originally...
Yeah.
I think... wasn't the original Fallout's BioWare, but Fallout 3 and 4 was Bestsoft, I think.
Yeah.
If I remember my video game history right. I was more making fun of, like, Baldur's Gate or Dragon Age, where it's like, hi, and now the guy hates you. What? Wayne, what about you? You haven't run too many games. You've run some. What do you do with your notes?
I have every note I've ever taken.
Tattooed on his wife's back. Creepy.
From running games, it was all electronic, like prison so there's break. No reason for me not to keep it. I have plenty of hard drive space. I keep everything I've ever written because I didn't used to, and I really miss some of the things I wrote as a teenager. I'm sure they're horrible, but I miss being able to go back and read them and see that they were horrible. So for me, I keep everything. I still have somewhere the handwritten notes from my first Skies of Glass game that you were running, Dan. Because that was when I was taking notes as a player. I kept all of that somewhere.
And to talk about me more, Actually, I forgot something about when I do notes. I have a notebook, right? I get a notebook, and Dawn buys these artsy, fartsy, fancy notebooks from Barnes & Noble because nobody ever buys them, and they go on deep discount. And then she gets them for like $2 and then takes an additional 30% off of that, this $20 notebook. And I'll take one of these notebooks, and I'll use it, depending on the length of the campaign or how much I want to use it. When I'm done with that campaign, I do not tear those pages out because I've only used like 5% of the notebook. I refuse to use that notebook anymore for the campaign. Even in our current campaign, because we did chapter one and now we're into chapter two, if you notice, I have two notebooks. I have my little tiny red one that I used for the first time, and then I have a newer, larger, thinner one that I'm using for this campaign. I rank that right up there with you training your dice on 20. I don't know why I do it. I refuse to use the same notebook twice for two different games or two different parts of a game.
I can't question it because everyone doubts my dice module until it's put to the test.
Yes.
Chris, what about you? And then I'll talk.
Not only have I saved, I would say, nearly all of my notes and things from all the games that I've run for the past three decades, I have notes from other guys who they were going to throw them out. And I was looking through them, and I saw their maps, and I saw some of the illustrations that they had made. And I'm like, you're going to throw this out? Well, I'm taking this.
Wait. So you like, yeah, I'm with Wayne on this one.
We need a Chris's awkward confession because he has some almost as good as mine.
Yeah, you just creeped Wayne out. You dumpster dive other GMs? Am I
I was in his room and he was going to get rid of it. So I'm like, well, I'll take it because in there there's...
So he's like crumpled up this crappy drawing of George the Dolphin's like throwing it at the trash can. You're like, no.
You know, actually, that's the thing,
slow motion bodyguard moment as you like
dive. I have to back up Chris on this. I completely agree with him. Not something I would do. Because
I totally agree with him, except you never have anything to do with the idea. That's not my style.
He's right,
but I wouldn't do it.
That's not my style. That's not how I do things. That's not how I run a game. But if I was like Chris, or if I was like you, Dan, and I had a friend, and we had just gone through a campaign, and they're like, all right, done with this notebook, and he's thrown it to our trash can, and there's hand-drawn maps in there, hand-drawn pictures of castles and creatures and lords and stuff, stat characters, NPCs, all statted out with backgrounds.
And that's the thing, is that the dude's illustrations are really good. He was a really, really good illustrator, and, you know, he didn't really care. So he was ditching it, and some of the stuff and some of the plot lines for the adventures that he had come up with on his own were pretty good.
It's like buying a campaign module.
You know what? I got
only pulling it out of the trash can.
I have to back up and concede that point, because as much as I'm making fun of it, the more I think about it, for sake of internal consistency, I have to say you guys are right, because I'm sitting here talking about how I like the idea of this website that basically is just a repository of other people's GM notes, and then I'm making fun of Chris for taking somebody else's GM notes.
And you know, so, and I have to say, one of the things I'm most proud of that I still retain has nothing to do with plots of adventures, but it's from back in the days when we were heavily playing Battletech, and the people who were on our side, you know, as opposed to the GM who was running, obviously, the enemy troops, we did all of our internal radio communications as notes in a notebook, and we would name the character speaking, write down what he was saying, and some of it was serious, you know, as to where he was going to go or who he was going to take a shot at, but majority of it was just joking and making fun of each other or making fun of those characters, and we would pass that around, and that had absolutely nothing really to do with the game, but that's the stuff that I'm glad that we still have, because I can go back and I can read those, and I can remember parts of that, of those particular battles, you know, so in a certain sense it's very much like a war story that you're reliving. It's just kind of cool.
I hang on to my notes to a certain point. If I know that a game was really bad, I won't bother keeping the notes. Or if a game gets too old, I'll probably end up losing them just because at some point I'll do a paperwork purge like I did on the recording studio and things will get thrown out.
Recording studio looks very nice, by the way.
Thank you.
It still feels weird every time we walk in, though.
Or I'll get to a point where they're all on a particular computer and I have to get rid of that computer because it doesn't work anymore. And so a certain amount of notes go with it.
Google Docs, man.
I know. I've started using Google Docs. But I hang on to notes for two purposes. One, because of the fact that I run games for a variety of groups, particularly if you look at a course of time, like over the past 10 years, I've run games for a lot of different groups. When I'm running dry on ideas, there's probably dozens of great games that I ran for a different group
that I could take and readapt to a particular group set of characters, their group template, et cetera, but mine and recycle my own game ideas and reintroduce them into this setting, and it would work wonderfully. The second thing that I use it for is from a standpoint of my own side projects, because there are several homebrews that I want to develop into more publishable forms as rules, or I may want to develop into prose. And so the things that I write, whether about rules, setting, plot, characters, whatever, in these games are useful to me for unrelated creative projects further down the road. And I have found myself very often digging through old game notes when I'm not even working on a game. I'm working on something completely different. I'm trying to remember, oh, I came up with some great system names for these star systems, and what were those? I'm digging through game notes, looking them all up again. But you know what? I guess to wrap this topic up and move on to something else, once again, I will link to this pagmata.org site.
You just hate saying that.
I do. You know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to like reserve like bob.com and redirect it to their site as a public service. So, but for now, I will put
great
it in
the site.
Horrible
URL.
Name. Yeah. So I'm going to put this in the show notes so you guys can look this up. I highly recommend checking it out and looking into what it takes to contribute to it. I think this is a wonderful thing, and I'm glad it's out there. The other topic we're going to talk about today is one that was posed by a forum user,
George the
Dolphin. I clicked back to a web browser to go back to the forums, and George the Dolphin's still up. I'm going to have to link this off the show notes as well, because this is just too much. All right. This was posted by a woman whose forum handle is Callie. I obviously have no idea what her
Indian god of death.
I don't know. Well, and she has down here that she's Mrs. Saragon, and I know who Saragon is, but that's not his real name either. So anyway, this was posted by forum user Callie, and Callie gave a really long post, which, as with everything else, I will link from the show notes if you want to read the full thing. But the shortened version of it is that she's suffering from what in the business world I call the once an intern, always an intern syndrome. And this is the unfortunate fact that back in the 1940s, you could join a company as an intern, and if you stuck with it decades later, you'd be a senior vice president. Don't work that way anymore. You come in as an intern, when they're looking for somebody to promote to a full-time position or team lead, they'll be like, well, he can't do that. He's just an intern. And they'll hire somebody outside the company. And I know there are exceptions to this, but in my experience, this is the trend of how things work. And
it's
this
hilarious because I've never actually seen it work that way. No, I've only seen the other way.
I was actually thinking of all of our interns.
Yeah.
And this one's been canned.
But you know what? I've seen some very capable people come in at low levels, and I'm not talking about myself here. This is not my axe. And I have recommended to the people over me, you need to promote this person. They wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because as far as they see it, whatever you came in at, that's all they will ever view you as. Now, her situation as it relates to gaming is that she started off on the outside of a gaming group, and she talks about how people in gaming groups tend to fall into roles. You get the guy who always GMs, you get the guy that always plays this character class or this particular template of a character personality or whatever. And one of the roles that has popped up within her group is you get the gaming widows. That there's the people that kind of surround the gaming group who are themselves not gamers, but are ubiquitously present somewhere in the background. And at some point she decided that she would like to try gaming and came up with particular characters or particular titles that she would like to try. But now the gaming group is really not taking her that seriously, is not trying her ideas, is not willing to put those games into circulation. And so the question that she posed to our forum community, and which we're going to kick around here, is if you are in that situation, how do you take yourself from being that non-gamer, that wife or husband or whatever standing in the background, to being someone that is actively involved in that hobby?
Sit down at the table with a pre-made out character sheet and say, are we here to game or are we here to bitch?
I told a joke at Fear the Con while we were sitting in a sushi bar. Mm-hmm. And the joke goes like this. This is the first joke I think I've ever told on Fear the Boot. But nonetheless, here we go. There's a guy who lives in a particular village. And this guy is renowned throughout his village as the most successful fisherman in his village. That, well, most people go out and they, you know, have their rod and reel or might have a net. They come back with a small number of fish. This guy comes back every day with just grocery bags full of fish. And so there's a particular game warden from a neighboring town who knows there's got to be something screwy going on here. I'm going to come in. I'm going to bust this guy. So he comes in one day and happens to catch this guy, you know, hanging around one of the local hangouts, and says, you know, hey, I'm from one of the nearby towns, and I was wondering if you'd take me out and show me your secrets. Show me how you're getting so many fish. And the guy says, well, sure thing. Why don't you just meet me down on the docks at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, and I'll show you my secret to getting so many fish. So the very next morning, they meet up at 7 a.m., and the game warden notices that this guy doesn't have a rod and reel, doesn't have bait, doesn't have a net, doesn't seem to have anything. They get in the rowboat, and the guy rows him out, you know, a little bit out into the lake, and eventually reaches under the seat of the rowboat and pulls out a stick of dynamite. Mm-hmm. And lights it and throws it into the water, and kaboom! And all these dead fish come floating up to the surface, and he just starts scooping them into the boat. And a game warden, thinking he's so smart, whips out his badge and says, aha, I'm a game warden from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and I want you to know that you're under arrest for breaking all these different laws, and I'm going to take you in. At which point, the guy very calmly reaches back under his seat, pulls out another stick of dynamite, lights it, hands it to the game warden and says, Sonny, you going to talk or are you going to fish? And that is my advice. Not my only advice, but my first advice. If you are in that situation, Chad has it right. You've got to be a little bit pushy. Start off nice. Yeah. Say, hey, I'd really like to try this. Is there a character I could play in this game? Would you guys be willing to try a particular title I'm interested in? But if they won't budge, then you know what? You figure out what game they're playing. You write up a character. You come in the next particular game session, you sit down with your pre-gen character, and when they start up, you look around the table. When they look at you blankly, you say, you going to talk or are you going to fish?
I think one thing to remember that a lot of non-gamers don't realize is that it's not a game, it's a gaming group. So a lot of people come in with this mindset of, I want to play a sci-fi game, or I want to play this. Well, if they're not playing that, I'll just come in when they play that, and then I'll leave later. And I've seen this actually with multiple people that aren't gamers have had this conversation. That's just not the way to look at it. Mm-hmm. It isn't a game. It's a gaming group. A gaming group is give and take. Sometimes you're going to play something that's not your genre. Sometimes you're going to play something that is. You can't pick and choose when you come in. If they're playing a fantasy game and you don't care for fantasy, give it a try. Learn the ropes on something you don't necessarily care for as much. And then next time, you'll be part of the group. You'll be part of the vote. You'll already be in, and you can get that game you want.
Yeah, and I think, Wayne, there's the critical part right there at the end, because you're absolutely 100% right that there is a give and take, and part of that is you do have to give, that you may have to accept that your first time around, your second time around, your third time around, it may not be what you want to do, but making those concessions is how you become part of the group without appearing bossy. And that's how you earn that vote. You know, when I joined the group that I'm in right now, when it first started, I preferred GMing, but I accepted I'm the new guy. I can't come in and throw down that I'm going to GM and here's what we're going to play. And so I waited until three or four people went through rotation ahead of me before I was able to run my first game for that group, which I believe, Wayne, was the Skies of Glass game you played in. But I had been in that gaming group for a year or two or something like that prior to that game. Because I had to accept I'm the new guy. I don't get to pick. What I have to do is I have to build myself into the social structure, and then I get to vote. Then I get a turn. Mm-hmm. Then I get to say, you know what, guys? We've played a whole lot of this. Why don't we try something I like? And at that point, if nobody will budge, they're a bunch of jackasses. But if you come in and just say, look, I'm not going to join until we play X, Y, or Z, then that's really not how that social give and take works.
You may actually enjoy this game that they're playing that you don't expect to.
Yeah,
I never would have imagined that I would have gotten so deeply into a post-apocalyptic setting that plays like a Western. If you look at my genres that I got into before, that wouldn't have been anywhere near it. And look how invested I got in Skies of Glass afterwards.
Yep.
Would have never even imagined it if I hadn't sat down at that table and said, okay, this is a game they're playing. I want a game. I'm going to learn it.
The brilliant allegory I came up with when we were outlining this was, you've got to become a citizen before you get a vote.
That's right. That's right. And my counter to that, because I completely agree with that statement, but my counter to that is, if that doesn't work, make your own nation. gather your own citizens around you. And I've done that before, where instead of forcing my way into a group, I started a new group. Like with Callie here, with her problems, if she can't get into the group or doesn't want to get into the group or doesn't want to play the kinds of games that these guys play.
Gather up the three or four other widows and start your own game.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
While they're busy playing whatever, play what you guys want to play. Because if you're feeling that way, you're probably not alone. And even if you're alone in that group, I guarantee you, you're not, probably not alone in your city.
Yep. Meetup.com, get local gaming store message boards, talking to friends, people who you're close to, geek people that you know, even people who aren't geeks who might
say, hey,
be interested.
I'm running this you as my friend. You want to try this out. And if it sucks, it sucks. I'll never do it again. This is how my brother-in-law got into gaming. He had no idea really what gaming even was until he met and married my sister. And as a result, began talking to me and became interested in what his brother-in-law was doing. And out of that, he is now a big fan of role-playing games. But he got into it because I was into it. I mean, so to speak. I mean, certainly he found his own interest in it. But nonetheless, he was exposed to it for the first time because I was into it. And I invited him to his first game. And he right now is in his first full-time or I guess a second full campaign. But I have run both his first and his second.
And he's got his fangs and cape on order. And
Totally.
One of us.
Absolutely. He's got his dating questionnaire worked out, I don't totally approve of because he's married to my sister. But
well, he had to, he felt he had to play some catch up.
Yeah, exactly. It's part of the culture. So I'm trying to explain it to my sister that he's not actually cheating on her. He's just trying to be as messed up as Wayne.
But the odd thing is the only one he gives the questionnaire to is you. So
yeah, and that's also pretty creepy. And so I'm not sure if we're related and is this legal and whatever, but
I think related to that.
Pat opens
Pat,
his
shut
the
up.
First time Pat, you episode. Shut the f- up.
Oh, Pat, I'm sorry. Pat, please, by all means, go.
42 minutes.
The first time this turtle wanders out into the road, 18-wheeler.
Right, go for it, Pat, dude. Go.
I actually want to talk about this from the other side of what you guys have been spouting here. And this.
Well, spouting?
Spouting, yes.
That's a strangely accusatory verb.
Well, take it as you will, whatever. But I'm going to talk about the other players in our group because I'm talking about specifically in what Callie has addressed here. Really, in reading that whole email, it's talking about this is her husband and the friends that they have in common here that have sort of discovered that they're gamers, that she wants to be involved in that. And that's actually a theme that I see quite a bit. My own wife is in that sort of situation too. And a lot of other females and or males that I know can sort of come up against that. I think that it's very important for the gamers out there. I think that they should recognize this and really try to accommodate that too. And if they have a situation like this, that they should be more aware of it and try to be a little bit more inclusive and help with that. Because when you've got somebody that's interested in role playing and they are terribly intimidated by this for whatever reason, I think it's your responsibility as a veteran player or whatever to help them and get them into the hobby. I mean, that's what we do in this hobby is, get people involved, show them the ropes and be supportive of pulling them in. I think that's really important to do.
Pat, I absolutely agree with you. And let me draw on two things you said there. The first thing is dealing with their insecurities, and that may be too harsh of a word, but their uncertainty regarding gaming, the fact that they feel like an outsider, they're intimidated by it. This is something that I really went through with Carla because she watched first like me, Mike, Tim, and Kevin, and all those guys play, and then later watched this group play and felt very intimidated by it. You know, you guys know so much about the system and the lingo and the settings and all this stuff.
And the conventions, and I don't mean Gen Con.
Yeah, you mean, the practices.
Julie was the same way. Just because she hasn't seen me play.
Well, but the thing was, she felt very intimidated by that. And some people are braver about jumping in than others. But what really helped there was, well, quite frankly, I grabbed a group where almost everyone was new to gaming. I realize that's not always an option, but there is still the cognizant choice a group can make to slow down, to back up, to say, you know what? Winning a convert to the hobby is worth choosing a little bit of a different system or setting to fit their comfort levels. With Carla,
I knew damn well if I was going to get her into the hobby, there was only one point I was going to get her in at, which was Star Trek, because she knew the setting. She's a big Trek geek. I eventually got her into D&D, and the way I sold her on D&D was she was a huge fan.
You lied and said it was Star Trek.
She was a huge fan of Lord of the Rings movies.
Lots of on the holodeck.
Lots of Vulcans.
Well, she was a huge fan of Lord of the Rings movies, so I just pointed out to her the truth we gaming nerds know, which is fantasy's horribly ripped off from Tolkien anyway. And so I said, look, you're playing Lord of the Rings. We worked backwards from there.
Yeah.
To your other point about making an active attempt to be inclusive of them, this is something, and I hate to sprain my arm and pat myself on the back, but this is something that I try to do, I guess, about a week and a half ago when we last met, when it was mentioned that our characters were about to depart that city, and Beth couldn't play full-time, but she was going to play part-time, and she was going to take over as the person you left in charge of that city. Mm-hmm. And I actually had a brief conversation with her on the stairs and then up into the kitchen, where I said, my character's about to leave as well, but in the brief time that Narl was dead, I established that the contender to his throne was a female gnoll by the name of Tarpa, which I later just kind of on the fly established was also his mate, and they had pups together, which was...
They're so cute.
Well, which was completely made up on the fly, which we mentioned last episode.
Godfather.
Yeah, actually, Pat's character is the godfather of his pups. But what I said to her on the way up was she's like, oh, I'm going to do this, this, and this. And Chad asked me not to repeat what she said because he wants to be surprised by it. Mm-hmm. But she said that basically, here's the... cruel feminine hand that's about to descend upon the city. And I said, well, you know what? Looks like the ladies can pull together because Gnarl's leaving Tarpa in charge of his clan. And so here's what Tarpa's going to do. And she and I had this little girl moment where we were working out what we were going to do while the boys were gone, which is strangely psychotic given the fact that I'm on both sides of that. But nonetheless, you know, we had this thing worked out. But I was trying very much to involve her to, you know, say, look, here's how we're going to play off of each other. And here's what we're going to do together to create this kind of havoc on the city. And so I completely agree with you. And it's something that we've done in our group. And I would urge, certainly, the people that are in Callie's group. Look, if you're in Callie's group and listening to this, she's expressing an interest in a hobby that you are participating
in. Wait a minute.
Let's hope she's expressed it to them.
Is this a Fear the Boot intervention?
Yes, it is. You're damn right. Yes. It is. Because this is something that is good for the gaming hobby.
That was going to go to the point that I was going to make, which actually Pat kind of alluded to, was the fact that if she is finding some resistance, there's somebody at that table who is essentially would be her ally. It should be the GM, but if it's not, it's bound to be a player. In this case, it damn well better be your husband. And that person is someone that you can at least latch on to, who can help get you and treat you with the respect that you're looking for and set that example for the rest of the group so that they follow suit. If for some reason she's finding, you know, having problems in getting that acceptance and getting rid of that non-gamer tag.
And one of the things that I see most commonly in players like this is, and because Beth says this all the time, and I think you said that Carla said it too, is that she's terribly afraid. She says, I'm just afraid I'm going to make a mistake. I want to play, but I'm afraid I'll do something wrong.
Oh, God, to you which, guys make mistakes to which all the time.
I just sort of look at her dumbfoundedly because I'm like, yeah, well, that's the thing. There is no such thing as really making a mistake in role-playing. I mean, you do stuff that maybe doesn't work or it's not the best in the world, but it's not a mistake. It's all about fun. So you got to leave that behind. You know, Callie, don't think in terms of that. Don't worry about, oh, I don't want to make a mistake or have people get upset with me because I don't know every little thing. To hell with them. It doesn't matter. Just do it. Kind of what they're saying. Jump in with both feet. It's scary and a little stage fright, but there's, you know, that's the thing. I mean, they should not be judging you. It's all about, let's make a story. Let's have fun. Let's do some bad crazy stuff and roll with it.
Well, now, and there's only one way that you can truly make a mistake in a role-playing game, and that's if you have a bunch of people that are really harsh with rules lawyering or setting lawyering, and they just decide to crush you.
Don't play with those people.
Yeah, quite frankly, they're dickwads, and if they won't let you into their group, you are dodging a bullet here.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly not saying that's what Saragon's group is like, because obviously I've never played with them, but I'm just making the point to play off what Pat's saying, that he's absolutely right. If this is a good gaming group, you can't make a mistake. These are people, to use one of my dad's train analogies, the engine has to back up to pick up the cars. And that's exactly what needs to occur here, is the rest of the group needs to slow down a bit. And I would have to think they're willing to do that. And if they're not, if they're going to just crush you for some pointless, idiosyncratic mistake, then you were better off not gaming with them anyway. Because
the real mistake is not playing at all, is not making the attempt.
It's like the reverse of war games. The only way to win is to play.
I have to come at this from the complete opposite direction now. Since we're all like, you know, girl power and positive and just do it, I have to come in from the opposite direction here. When I was running a game,
you don't like women at the table, do you?
No, actually, I love women at the table.
He's gonna make me elegant, isn't he?
Probably. But when I was running a campaign, when I had a group, we were running multiple campaigns. The people I was running with were new to gaming, and they thought it was wonderful. Not me in my games, but just gaming
the
in
concept,
general.
The concept
was wonderful. And what do you do when you find something new that's great? You want to share it with your friends. And so I noticed after a while that we would get a new player. No one would tell me, and I'm running this game. And we had a pretty good size group as it was. Okay, that's cool. And then we would get another player, a friend who would just show up. Okay, cool. Okay, you're playing this guy. Then we would get another player, and this other player was playing something totally off the wall crazy. We're doing a serious sort of fantasy, low magic, serious campaign, and this guy's playing the dwarf who has the 10-barrel keg on his shoulder at all times, and he uses that to smash people with. Ha ha, fun concept. I don't even know your name. You just showed up.
And we're playing Cyberpunk.
And we're playing Cyberpunk, and now you got this dwarf, and it's just like, okay. And I had to put my foot down.
Yeah.
And that means that I have to break certain social conventions. I have to look at a person in the eye who's having fun with their friends, doing something positive, and I have to look at them in the eye, and I have to say, no, stop. I'm sorry, but you have to leave. That's not easy to do. It's easy for me to do because I'm kind of an asshole, and that doesn't really bother me. But for other people, that is very difficult to do. And I think that as we're saying all this stuff about being proactive, even I said, you know, be proactive, just get in there and just do it. Do take some consideration. Ask first.
That's a good point you bring up, because I've actually never had that happen, because I think we've always, in the groups that I've been in, we have had sort of player bloat, you might want to call it, but it was always communicated. Right. I mean, we always communicate. It was always a, hey, I've got a friend that would be interested in playing. Would it be okay if he came next week?
Yeah.
And it was always discussed beforehand. And I would certainly hope that, yes, all you players out there do that. I mean, communicate and don't just bring buddies to the weekly game and expect.
Even though we just told people to show up.
The caveat is, yeah, communicate that with you.
Make sure it's okay because there's a lot of
expectation on the GM.
And the difference of context there was, Chat, in your situation, what you're describing is that communication with the group wasn't done. In this case, we're reading Callie's public forum post. I know she wants into Saragon's game. I'm hoping Saragon, therefore, knows she wants into his game.
Right.
This has been communicated. There is an opportunity here for this group to sit down with her and figure out how to integrate her in a good, positive way. You are absolutely right. You are 100%, 200%, 435.87% right.
I was going for 87.
Yes, and you got it. You earned that extra 0.07.
We broke him. We got him. We got the disapproving head
for
shake.
A stroke. Yes. But that communication needs to occur. I think the reason I was skipping that step with Kylie is because of the fact that I'm reading off a public forum post. I'm assuming that communication's occurred.
Yeah.
And maybe it hasn't.
I think that's one good point here. Except for this case where it actually did work to go on the forum. Normally, the communication should be with the group, not with the internet.
Don't play the mind reader game of, why don't you know what I know?
Yeah.
Tell them.
Mm-hmm. I want to be in your group. Why don't you know that I want to be in your group?
Yes.
And be open-minded. If that group is playing D&D right now, and that's not what you want to play, give it a try.
If you're listening to our show, I kind of have to assume you know a little bit about gaming, even if you're not gaming now, and that you know what a rules heavy game is. You know what a story heavy game. You know what lots of role play is. Maybe you don't necessarily know what you like or what you want, but that's another thing. Before you ask, find out what kind of group it is. Hey, what kind of game you're running? Is there a lot of role playing? Guys really into the rules stuff. You got models. What kind of game system you're running? Find that out first before you ask, because if you ask, they might say yes, and then you're sitting at a table with a bunch of rules-lawyering power gamers. No such thing as wrong, bad fun, but if that's not your thing, then you have an awkward social situation where you just ask to get into the group, and now you're telling them, well, guys, yeah, you're not doing it right. I'm kind of gone.
Right.
So my advice, a little bit of homework, ask, then be assertive. And then if that fails, make your own group.
Awesome. I think that's where we're going to cut this one off. So, Callie, I hope that you and Saragon are able to work this out such that the next time we hear from you, you are now happily involved in a game. If not, then contact me about some marriage counseling that I can...
Fear the marriage counseling. No.
We ain't going to do
no,
it.
No. Right so, out.
But nonetheless, do certainly, no matter what your situation is, check the show notes for links to the charity auction, Mikey Mason's Kickstarter thing, George the Dolphin, and all kinds of other craziness. You guys have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later days.
This has been a production of Hear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Hear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.